Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Feeding the Future, Heritage Radio's program dedicated to the health and well-being of the next generation. I'm your host, Oriane Casentino. Thanks for tuning in. Today, our guests will be Nancy Easton and Bill Telepan of Wellness in the School, or WITS, if you don't have a lot of time to say it, an organization that works to promote healthy eating, environmental awareness, and fitness as a way of life for kids via the public school system. But before we bring on our guests, I'd like to talk a little bit about getting our home kitchens in shape and share with you some ideas and techniques for cooking with less waste and getting the most out of your ingredients, especially the ingredients that you spend good money on and are of a little bit better quality. This topic was inspired by an event I recently attended on behalf of the network at the James Hotel down in Soho, where the head chef, David Burke, did a cooking session with a group of kids in conjunction with Chicago-based project Common Threads, whose goal for the next 5 years is to educate 1 million kids to cook wholesome meals. You could catch them at commonthreads.org and learn more about that project. Chef Burke's musings were info-packed and pretty chef-centric as he translated his thoughts to benefit a room of nine-year-olds. While he whipped up soup, he sautéed chicken, he made salad, he made waffles, and throughout all of it, a theme that he stressed was using parts of your food that might look like scrap and taking a second thought and finding out uses that it could have while you're preparing your meal. So he inspired the kids to use some of those ingredients and get involved in the cooking. So he let the kids squeeze the pulp out of a tomato, and they caught the pulp in a bowl, and while he chopped the flesh to go into the salad, the kids whisked the seeds and whisked the juices into a vinaigrette. In the same dressing, he used the stems from basil leaves that the kids had stripped, and he used the stems to infuse some oil, give it a nice green color and a nice fresh flavor. He also went on to take those leaves and deep fry them into these really nice crispy little green basil feather things. But he then admitted that that was a technique that was delicious, but not extremely healthy. So I feel like he was a little bit torn sometimes between what's delicious and what's healthy, but he did reiterate several times that it's okay to make an unhealthy choice once in a while, as long as your other choices are generally healthy. He also used a little bit of animal fat after cooking some beef. He then sautéed some vegetables in the beef, which he also admitted was not terribly healthy. But it was funny because some of the kids were familiar with that technique, which I thought was great. So they recognized that
from
home cooking. But if the animal is well raised, then I think it's an okay thing to do once in a while, especially if you are spending that kind of money. You want to use all the parts that you can. It was nice to see him use the whole chicken for the soup stock, and he held up each piece of raw chicken for the kids and showed, these are the wings, these are the legs, these are the thighs, and the kids were ooh and wow and ooh. But it was good for them to see that chicken is not only a finger shape. That's always a good thing to teach people. And he threw that in the pot with some water, taught them the difference between a stock and a broth, and he used corn cobs in the stock, which is also a great technique. Told them then they wouldn't have to use as much butter or cream to thicken the stock. And that's also delicious. Gives a little nutritional boost. And then I think, I'm not sure if he taught these or if I just picked them up from watching him, but other good techniques that I got from this event were using cooked grains in your batters. So using things like cooked barley, cooked oatmeal, cooked quinoa, and just dropping them into like muffins or waffles or pancakes or quick breads can also like give a little bit more hearty.
Which is good. I'm learning.
Oh, good. That's the point.
can make your baked goods a little more hearty and filling. And another thing that I do at home, I just did it this weekend with some frozen cranberries that were from a, I don't know when, in my freezer, but to just throw them in a pot with a little bit of liquid and a little bit of sweetener and make sort of like a fruit compote, which is really nice. You could use berries, apples, pears, peaches, just chop them up, pop them in the pan, and then you can control how much sweetness goes in there, unlike jams and jellies and things that come out of a jar. So I feel like that's a really great tip because, I don't know, fruit seems to want to die really fast in the fridge. So this is a way to catch it right before it goes. Just throw it all in a pan and cook it for a little while. And then the compote itself will last even longer than the fruit would have. So you win. And so when you're when you're efficient with your ingredients, many benefits, not only saving money, but a little bit of extra healthy and a little bit of resourcefulness. So give a little thought to that kind of stuff when you're looking at your fridge and saying, we have nothing, because there's most likely something in there that could be repurposed and go to yet another meal. So what I'm going to do is post a recipe on our show page. So it's heritageradionetwork.org. And check it out when you can. There's recipes, one that goes with every show. I think I'm going to do a recipe for a fruit compote this time. And that's my that's my little speech. Now I'm extremely happy to introduce today's guests, the executive director and co-founder, Nancy Easton, and the executive chef, Bill Telepan, of Wellness in the Schools, wellnessintheschools.org, if you need to find them on the web. Thank you guys for being here.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you for learning while you're here.
Sorry, I'm a horrible guest. I'm talking while you're talking.
So. No, that's wonderful. It broke the ice for me. Okay. For me and this microphone, not between you and I. So we're going to just take a really quick break, and then we'll talk about all the things that we're going to talk about during that break, and then we'll talk about them in front of the microphones. So thanks for tuning in to Feeding the Future on Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Penny by Snowmine on the heritageradionetwork.org. Stay tuned for more Feeding the Future.
Grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Welcome back.
I might take a nap.
We're back on.
I've heard it so many times.
We have so many. Our guests are so excited today.
I'm just kidding.
They can't control themselves.
Good time.
So welcome back to Feeding the Future on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Oriane Costantino. And who you're hearing there is one of my two guests, Chef Bill Telepan, the executive director of Wellness in the Schools, executive chef of Wellness in the Schools. We also have the executive director and co-founder, Nancy Easton.
A lot of executives going here.
Seriously, it's like a board meeting in here. So welcome, you guys. Thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having us. I should throw out one more executive. Bill Telepin is not only the executive chef of Wellness in the Schools, which I like that being his first title here. He's also a restaurant owner, an executive chef of Telepin on the Upper West Side. And
yes,
soon to be Telepin local.
And then Tribeca.
Is that downtown? Great. Yeah. Congratulations. When's that to be expected?
In the fall.
Awesome.
Yep.
Congrats.
Getting my healthy
that.
Bike riding in.
Oh, do you live up at the top?
I live on the Upper West Side near the restaurant.
Okay, so you get to
I'm going to buy my city bike pass and use the bike. If I get to find one,
there'll be bikes uptown by the time you open.
Yeah, we'll
see. Maybe you could,
right?
You know,
initiate
start the,
that.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Put a blender on the back. Make a smoothie on my way down.
Whoa.
All right, we're off topic.
I wanted to give you 1 minute, Telepin.
We are innovating. So, well, it seems like there's a great energy going on here, and this is the very energy that might have come together to back in 08
yes.
to propel WITS to a new place. So tell us a little bit about where do we begin? Yeah. Do we begin with what it was before Bill came on board? and your yes. inspiration for starting
BB
this organization.
Before Bill. Why don't I start with why I started WITS, and then, Bill, you can talk about when
sure.
we met. So in 2005, actually, it was when we started WITS, but the inspiration for WITS was really back in the, now I'm aging myself, in the mid-90s when I was a teacher and then a school leader of a school on the Lower East Side on 12th Street, which now is the home to the beautiful Hearth restaurant, but, you know, when I was there, there was no Hearth. And really what I saw as a school leader were children walking into school with a bag of chips, usually orange, and a bottle of soda, usually orange. And so orange fingers the rest of the day. But seriously, they came in and that was their breakfast. And they then proceeded to pretty much typically processed meal for lunch. And so I saw firsthand as a young teacher and school leader the impact of poor diet and lack of physical activity on children's ability to learn, you know, not even able to walk a flight of stairs without taking a breath, and not really able to focus in class. So this was something we saw as young teachers. There was not a whole lot of conversation, in fact, none, around eating and obesity and healthy eating and its impact on learning. But we saw it ourselves. And cut to 2001, when we were having children of our own, we decided to do something about it. And started WITS 4 years later. It's a long time coming. started WITS four years later, got off to a great start. And then in 2008, when we were running three programs in three schools, two schools in high poverty neighborhoods, and then one school in my program in my daughter's school on the Upper West Side at PS 87. I'll let you take it away, Chef, from there.
Which happened to be my daughter's school. And so one day they were, I guess the work they've been doing already in the cafeterias, they had brought together, they made these sandwiches that they wanted to bring into the cafeteria, and my wife and I were heading into our parent-teacher conference that night, which is a great time to sort of introduce. It was brilliant to introduce it that day.
It was
day.
A chicken Caesar sandwich, just want you to know.
And a tofu thingy. And and so, I eat anything. So I just was like, hey, give me a sandwich.
It wasn't just like, anything.
So I'm like, hey, these are pretty good. So we go to a conference, and I come out, and I, you know, met Nancy. I mean, we kind of knew each other, and I knew the other moms involved. And so I just heard a little bit about what they were doing, and I said, how can I help? And so what I did was sort of just sit in on a couple of meetings to try to learn what was going on. And then one day I saw it was just a lot of talk and back and forth. And they didn't really have this sort of food person. I didn't mean it that way. But there was like this – they didn't have a food person on their side who really understood the talk that they were talking about, like the actual workings on in the kitchen. And so I was able to sort of understand them and realize that, like, hey, maybe we should cook one day in the schools. And so we proposed to do three – cafe days, what we call, where I would do, they had a salad bar, and I saw the salad bar because I would do recess duty at the school sometimes. You know, we hang out with the kids in the recess yard, make sure no one's beating each other up. And it was brown lettuce, it was styrofoam tomatoes, and it was onions, and that was it, and some bottled dressings. And so of course it was unappetizing and no one was going to eat it. So of course they could say, oh, the kids wouldn't eat it. Well, I wouldn't eat it, you know what I mean? And so we decided to do a salad bar day, a sandwich day, sort of based on what they did before. And I saw some recipes that they had, and one of them was a vegetarian chili, so we decided that we'd make that from scratch. And they were a great success, and we took them to the other programs and to the other schools we were in.
following year, we went to 8 schools. We developed those recipes more. I mean, those particular ones went into the schools and did these cafe days in all the new schools, and all the while learning new recipes, developing new recipes. And by the end of the year in the 8 schools, we basically had a month's menu of recipes that we could use. So Nancy was, we were going into 10 more schools, and based upon her friend Randy Kopp's Teach for America program, it was like, let's bring kids, culinary graduates, into the schools to cook alongside with these people with this menu that we developed. And here we are, you know, 40 schools, and going to be in 50 next year. Did I miss anything?
No, just to clarify, when we went into those 8 schools, we were an entire staff of volunteers. So there were 40 cooks volunteering each one day a week. And so 40 times 8 schools, or five days of the week times 8 schools, we were 40 volunteers who were amazing. Wow. They'd spend a day in a school a week. And we realized at the end of that year, sort of two important things. One, that no matter how great they were, the continuity of a person there every day was really kind of important. So we decided to hire people. It was like, oh my gosh, we have to actually raise money and hire people to be in the schools every day. And then also to add an educational component. And that's my background as an educator. I've sort of felt we can't just throw, organic tofu, which is not what we're throwing on them. But we didn't want to change the menu up too drastically without teaching the kids why. And so we developed an entire component of the program called the WITS Labs, where they're cooking in the classroom. So the same chef who's in the cafeteria will leave the cafeteria 4 times a year to cook with the children. And they make the vegetarian chili, the famous vegetarian chili, in the winter. They make that. And they'll make other seasonal recipes throughout the year that are also in the cafeteria. So they are like, wow, this is awesome. I'm like, when's it going to be in the cafeteria? And it's been there all year. We're like, oh, it'll be there tomorrow. And so then they start eating it, right?
Right.
So that was a great addition to the program after the first sort of 2 years.
So as of now, these menus are available 5 days a week to the kids, as opposed to earlier when it was 3 cafe days a week.
Correct. And that happened right when we went into the 8 schools. We decided right away to do that menu.
Full time.
Yeah. And then we still had the cafe days to celebrate a new recipe. And at this point, there aren't so many new recipes, but we're just still celebrating. And something else that Bill brought to the program was his network of other chef friends and just his people in his world that really brought the program to a new level. And those chefs now all adopt a school, and they come for the cafe days. Again, not necessarily anymore to launch a new recipe, but to come and do a demo in the cafeteria and bring some excitement around the program. And they'll do a duel off of pesto and see which one is better. And so they have a lot of fun in the cafeteria with the kids. And that was another great Bill has brought a lot to the program, but at that time, it was just Bill and 8 schools, and then he recruited 20 friends.
And a restaurant.
I mean, if you have the resources. Wow, that's wonderful. And now, I know you're New York City based, but are you getting out of New York City much?
We don't get out much. We do. So we're in over 50 schools in this country now. Of course, 40 of them are here in New York. We have started working in the state of Florida, which has been a very exciting new project. Last year, the Department of Agriculture took over the school lunch program. And when that happened, we thought, well, we've got to get down there and help them. Because we knew if they were looking at it, that they wanted to do something good and better. So we started off with a pilot in Leon County, which is the state capital, in Tallahassee, in a couple of schools down there. And we're talking to them about growing that. We consulted on 7 more schools. And so we really hope to be, that's my home state. So I don't know sort of how that all happened. But we hope to be doing a lot more work in Florida and really around this country.
Fantastic. It seems to be a great model. And I know that it's also inspired lots of other programs. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to talk more about that when we come back from our break. Thank you so much. This is Oriane Costantino. You're listening to Feeding the Future on Heritage Radio Network.
This one's called Danger in the Snow by Snowmine on the Heritage Radio Network.org. You're talking
about danger in the snow. Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org today.
And we're back. We are here speaking with Nancy Easton and Bill Telepan of Wellness in the Schools. It's an organization that works to promote healthy eating, environmental awareness, and fitness as a way of life for kids via the public school system. We're going to talk now about how you guys have, in the past, how long has it been since you teamed up with the Department of Education School Food?
Actually, right from the start.
Okay. Now,
they are an awesome, an amazing office that feeds 860,000 children every day.
For
$1, second only to the military in this country. So they, there was no way that we would work and be able, you know, go into a cafeteria without really working closely with them.
My jaw's dropped.
I know. So we're only serving about 30,000 of those 860,000. But we have grown. We've been working with them for such a long time that we've really grown to have a great model with them. And the alternative menu was developed thanks to our work together. And that menu can actually be used in any school in New York City.
And do parents or principals, does somebody have to ask for that menu?
Yes.
How does that work?
Yes. And also principals or parents have to ask for us if they want our program. And we always say that if a principal is someone who has looked for us and sought us out, then we have 100% chance of success, which is always great. Parents are wonderful too, but sometimes the parents have to push the principal, and that's not always as successful, although we're still in the 90s with that success rate.
Yes,
the principal does have to ask for our program, and now that this is the first year of the alternative menu, and so they do have to ask for that as well. We, having our program really helps with training on the alternative menu. We work in a school for a three-year period, and by year four, the school becomes an alumni program. So we offer support, and we always offer training to their staff at no cost. But the first 3 years, it's a training model so that we ultimately move out of the school. So year one, our cooks, the WITS cooks, are in this cafeteria every day of the week. Year two, it's 1 day a week. Year three, it's 2 days a month. So they really start to wean themselves. And by year three, the school food cooks are preparing the alternative menu on their own. And frankly, they're preparing it by month six. It's not really even year three.
Right, because they also have experience in the kitchen.
Exactly.
And what's the cost of the alternative menu to the school?
So there's no additional cost. It's the same. Right. So the Office of School Food has now has developed, there are probably 20 menus, 20 lunch menus. There's the high school menu, the middle school menu, there's the vegetarian menu, and then there's the alternative menu. And the alternative menu is a primarily scratched cooked menu, and not so much meat, elimination of meat once a week at least, but not actually a lot of meat product. Only chicken is the only meat that we use. And so it's a less processed menu.
Right. What's the ideal cafeteria menu look like?
Do you want to talk about that, Chef, since I'm talking too much?
No, I mean, you probably won't. But anyway, it's you know, like we'll have like a meatless Monday day, which will basically be pasta focused. We take part in the Trailless Tuesday program that they have, where we develop sandwiches for them. Then we have like a sort of a Tex-Mex style kind of day, like on a Monday, where we take the vegetarian chili. We'll use
Wednesday
we'll do that in with just on its own in a burrito. We'll do some bean cheese quesadillas that day. Thursday is our chicken day, so there's a lot of rubs that we do or sauces that we do with it, and then there's Pizza Friday, of course. You know,
gotta have it.
Friday. But all of every day we have a salad bar. The salad bar has some like romaine and spinach on it, a couple some raw vegetables, and in certain schools or most schools, it's a composed salad. We make our own salad dressings that we develop, and the thing is, it's we're not bringing any additional product in with. Except for possibly olive oil, which is allowed to do, but the school has to purchase it, or we get donations for a school that want it. But basically, the dollar that they work with on this on their regular menu for the chicken fingers and the burgers is that was the whole thing. We wanted to work within that program. We had to work within that program. And also the other situation that comes up is the kitchen. A lot of the kitchens in New York City are what they call warming kitchens or modified kitchens, where it's basically it's just to reheat things. My daughter's school was one of those kitchens. So we developed all the recipes in the early days based in that kitchen, based on knowing that the possibility that we may enter a school that doesn't have the 10-burner stove with two ovens underneath it and six convection ovens. So Yeah, and the truth of the matter is, you can, unless you have a tilt skillet in a school, which most, which some of them do, you know, you're needing to use the, you need to basically cook as if it's an, a modified
the
kitchen,
because common denominator.
You don't have a giant pot to make chili for 600 kids. You know, you have to do it the way we do it in the convection oven, and it works brilliantly. And I think, you know, that was our key, I think, to the success early on, is that we were able to do it that way.
And what Bill didn't mention, I mean, the chef talked about the great meals, but they're also, they all meet the USDA regulations. There are new regulations this year, and one of those is that the vegetable has to be a different color every day. So you left out the vegetables, but there's a main, you know, there's a certain amount of protein, you know, carb, grain, and vegetable.
We only have 8 minutes, Nancy. Okay. So.
But they do meet the regulations.
No, but that's, I mean, that's a subject that comes up a lot in these shows, is like colors, the color of the mm-hmm, food. And mm-hmm.
Color of the rainbow.
And eat the rainbow. Yeah.
Eat the rainbow.
And that we teach that to the kids all the time. And Bill mentioned the homemade dressings. The kids are making those dressings in May and June in every school. And we study greens. So they are on their salad bar, which is really, it's one of our labs. It's the lab at the end of the year.
Yeah, a great tool. I mean, we talk about that all the time too, getting them involved, and then they're so much more prone to eating the food.
Yep,
exactly.
And not being scared. And then they'll go home and teach their parents.
Exactly. And
exactly.
we do
yeah.
parent classes as well, so they don't even have to do that.
Fantastic. Do you want to talk a little bit about the fitness element that's
sure,
also involved?
Sure. So yeah, we always leave that out in these cooking talk shows. But so the theory behind our work in New York City and in most cities in this country, recess and lunch go hand in hand. So children have a mere 20 minutes for each, or sometimes a little bit more, but it's recess and lunch back to back. So our concept was, let's take advantage of this 40 minutes or this hour, and that there's a healthy lunch and a healthy recess experience, so they can go back to school ready to focus and learn, with the long-term goal that they are learning lifelong habits, that so that we'll do our part, small or large, to combat the childhood obesity epidemic. So the recess piece is that while the cook is in the kitchen, there's a coach, usually former athletes and coaches themselves, on the recess yard working with the children to get the least active kids active and to help prevent playground bullying. They're awesome. They really organize the yard because there are often 200 kids and one coach. Sometimes there are two coaches, though, and a lot of the schools have asked us to bring
it's
in
terrifying.
Another coach. Yeah. So they organize the yard so that all kids can be playing safely. They train the school aides, who are the folks often out there, to do some of the games that we play. We have a toolkit of 500 games that these coaches, you know, use, although often they're doing the same games over and over because the kids love them. But they really are out in the yard playing. They play the point guard on the basketball team, or they do a relay races with kids, and that's really a fun, happy program where we have coaches working with kids, and we're really growing that program. We're not in as many schools in the Coach for Kids program as we are with the Cook for Kids. We're really growing it because we want to do what we say we do, this healthy period of lunch and recess, and then back to school ready to focus. It's a great program.
Wow, that's fabulous. And make people realize that it's not one thing that's going to change the problem, the
right.
enormous problem.
We believe very strongly in yes, in both. And the coach program also has what we call play days. So to mimic our cafe day, we partner with gyms and fitness organizations around the city who come 2 to 4 times a year also to play with the kids and do their specific sport, whether it's Super Soccer Stars or plank Pilates. And they come and all the kids get to rotate through that day to learn about. And again, it's promotion. It's exciting. It's fun. It brings awareness to what we're doing.
Thank you so much. My goodness.
And come to the 3-hour program.
Talking heads.
And also, I know there's also an environmental awareness element, but we're going to have to put you on another show for that.
That'll be the 5-hour program.
But that is actually all the time we have. And
wow.
It flew by. You guys were awesome guests. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners. So we have... Again, this is Nancy Easton and Bill Telepan of Wellness in the Schools. You can check them out at wellnessintheschools.org. I'm Oriane Costantino. You're listening to Feeding the Future on Heritage Radio Network. You can find this show and many more at heritageradionetwork.org and plenty of podcasts on iTunes and Stitcher. Enjoy your day.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.